Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's halfway through October on to November.
You ready to get through it already, huh?
Yeah.
Halloween's coming.
Yeah, I don't get much of a Halloween action around here. I'm on the side of a hill.
I bought my candy on Amazon again.
Oh.
It's just so easy. It's just so easy. Why go to the store, deal with the lines, deal with what costs what? You just do a quick comparison shop and you got your candy coming to you.
Yeah, you get a box of candy in the mail.
Exactly. It's like 20 bucks, I'm done. Well, let me give you a quick market update. We've had the slow grinder higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average touched 23,000 today for the first time ever. And then it backed off. Closed down about, closed up, but off about 20 or so points from the high. Earnings season is underway, and about 65 companies in the S&P 500 are reporting this week alone.
Yeah.
Like 100-something next week. And it's kind of funny because we've seen the same thing happen almost every earnings season. Everything rides up into earnings season. The numbers come out and it's like pre-market. Everybody's excited. And then they kind of come in a bit. Happened with Netflix. Netflix was like, I think at 211 last night. It closed at 198 today. We saw the same thing with Goldman Sachs. Some of the banks that reported last week, there's all this excitement. You know, the problem with the banks is, you know, they come out with numbers. You know, estimates of $1.61, they come in at 273. It's like, What is that? What? How do you? Then you got to decipher it, and you have to go through all the aggravation of trying to figure out what is included, what's not, what's different, how the analysts get it so wrong. It's pretty difficult with the banks.
I know it doesn't. It never makes any sense.
No, the banks are really a problem. Netflix is interesting. They beat on the metrics. They had a little bit slower subscriber growth here in the U.S., much more accelerated subscriber growth in. The rest of the world, ex-US, we'll call it, international. They beat on revenue. They beat on estimates. They have a massive cash burn. They're just plowing through their cash.
And apparently, they're scheduling even more money to spend on content next go round.
Do you think that's a good idea?
No.
I mean, I don't know what the choices are. Just playing reap. I remember when Netflix first came out, and I'm like, why would anybody want to buy this service? You know, back in the beginning. I'm thinking, all those movies on there, they're terrible. I could see those movies anywhere. You know, and then they got some better ones, and they got some better relationships forming. And then they came out with some of the, what was the first one? Was it House of Cards? Was that the first big one?
Yeah, it was the first big one,
It was the first big one. And then they had Breaking Bad. That was them, right?
I think Breaking Bad was on HBO.
Hmm.
It was the Orange is the New Black, maybe? Or that was HBO?
No, Orange is the New Black was definitely definitely Netflix. But, you know, I mean, they have a good lineup these days. But the problem is it seems that they realize that everybody gets tired of the series pretty quickly.
Well, now there's this new thing called war binging or something like that, or competitive binging, where as soon as the thing comes out, you can see how fast you can watch the whole series. So everybody's watching the whole series within 24 hours, and then they got nothing to watch after that.
Oh, that doesn't seem like a lot of fun.
Doesn't seem like fun to me. I like to stretch it out a little.
Yeah, that seems like agony, actually.
It is agony. This is a problem. Now they're going to, so they have to create content that's always about, you know, 10 to 20 episodes long that I hate, you know, I don't want to, maybe I'm wrong, but as far as I can tell, there's just not enough talent to make these shows.
Well, you see the same faces over and over again, right?
Yeah. And they're all going to be burnt out.
I don't know. I mean, I find some of their stuff is good. Some of the stuff is marginal at best. You know, I did like Orange is the New Black for a few seasons. Then I'm like, I don't like it. It just kind of faded for me. House of Cards, I just never got into. Everybody loves House of Cards. I watched a couple of seasons. I'm like, I don't know.
No, you watched more than I did. I watched the first season, thought it was quite good, and I've never watched it since.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what else is going on? Let's see. There's still nothing, I guess, bad to say, though, in terms of markets, economics, earnings, investor comfort. NAHB came out today, the housing confidence number. That was good. Basically, I guess there's also that giant carrot in front of everybody looking for the some kind of tax code. I mean, Trump has been on the road pushing for this tax code, telling everybody it's a new Christmas present. So you get a little Christmas present or a Hanukkah present or a Kwanzaa present or something. Aren't you excited?
Well, I haven't seen anything. I see a lot of talk and no action.
A lot of talk. That sums it up, doesn't it? A lot of talk. But there's something coming, and the market has had one of the most stellar post-election runs in history.
Yeah, I think it's number one.
It's not number one yet, I don't think. However, what's really interesting is, I was thinking about this, you know, taking all the credit for the market run due to a new president, a new administration, new Congress, Republicans that are in the majority. That let's kind of put that on the table and let's say, okay, that's what it's from. That's why. But tell me something. Why are global markets all around the world also hitting highs on a record basis every day? Is it? It can't be because of our election.
No.
So there's got to be something else going on.
But it could be. But it could be secondary effect, because it might not be because of the election, but it might be because of our market.
So you think the U.S. market is leading as usual and everybody else is moving everything up in sympathy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible. That does happen.
It is possible. And I would guess and bet that if Hillary had won, you wouldn't have had this market go nuts like this.
I agree with that. So that on its own is a reason that we should be happy from a pocketbook standpoint.
Yeah, that's yeah.
So let's talk about some of the earnings. IBM came out with earnings tonight. They beat on both metrics, both EPS and on sales. Magically, they reported an 11% effective tax rate that helped to push the EPS higher. Now, even though they beat on both their metrics, they also, I think, had a revenue decline again. But the 11% effective tax rate was lower than they anticipated, 12 to 15%. Now, this is going back to the question I have on tax reform of lowering the corporate tax down to 20% or 25% or whatever the number is. Is that really so necessary if a company like IBM can have an 11% effective tax rate? Are we really in the highest tax environment for companies around the world if IBM can come in with an 11% tax rate?
I'm not going to argue against lowering the taxes. So you're asking the wrong guy. And they've been pulling back on their earnings so much, but their sales have been sliding, and maybe they've got a lot of tax write-offs. I mean, they may have some genuine problems that end up with this 11% effective tax rate.
Well, it's good nonetheless, and it does help out their bottom line. So that's what everybody's excited about. The stock was up about, I think, $5. So it was close to... what is that? About 2.5-3% after hours at about 150 and change. Still pretty low, still not going anywhere, still in a consolidation for a long time now. After, you know, remember when it reached those highs and they finally rolled over? It's just sitting right there. Just can't get going. There's a lot of, I don't know if you've been seeing this, but there's a lot of stories out. Have you been seeing these headlines, the echoes of 1987 or any of these headlines that have been talking about how current market conditions remind us of 1987. Have you seen any of this?
No, I have not seen any of that. And I don't see that either. I don't see a 1987 scenario ahead of us.
Right. So I was thinking about this. I'm like, what's going on here? So then I realized it's October. And October 19th, 1987 was the day that the market had that. These days we call it a flash crash, but it was a one-day massive crash of the market, down 22% at one point during the trading day. There was no pricing available. You couldn't get bids. You just couldn't get anything.
Yeah, that's great.
It was impossible to really have any price discovery at that point. People were panicking, you know, going crazy.
I heard about people carrying cash out and running the bank.
Yeah, they were running the bank. People went berserk. You know, it's like, you know, people went like crazy. You can imagine what these rooms look like. And everybody's tie was kind of pushed to the side and their hair was all a mess and their shirt is all open and they're sweaty. People were nuts. I remember. Do you remember that day?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fantastic moment.
Yeah. It's one of those times from, I remember it very distinctly. You know, I was at that time back in 87. I was just beginning my career in the financial services area. And I remember, yeah, I didn't have any money.
Saying to yourself, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, what did I get myself into? And I'm looking around going, what the hell is everybody so excited about? Because I didn't really understand what was happening at the moment. I was fresh out, you know, fresh starting. So, you know, it was kind of one of those, you're looking around going, what is everybody so upset about? You know, and you see the news headlines and all that. And you're like, geez, what's happening here? But anyway, so I think what's happening, though, now is that
it turned out, by the way, just in summary, to be probably the greatest bull trap or bear trap.
Yeah. Yep.
Bear trap in the history of the market.
Now, there were some people back then that predicted this. This a famous name from that time period was Elaine Garizella.
Yeah.
Which
I don't know if you're pronouncing her last name correctly.
Garizella?
No, I can't remember how it's pronounced, but she was extremely famous for years afterwards until just recently.
Yeah, until she couldn't make another call.
Right. After 30 years more later, it's like she can't do anything.
Yeah. When's the last time you remember seeing somebody, Elaine, whatever her last name is, Garizella, says that the markets are ready for a correction or the markets are ready? When's the last time you heard any of that?
Before the 2007 crash, her name was still floating around.
Still floating around, but I don't think she made that call.
No.
So I started thinking about, why are we seeing all these? Why is this going on? Why I don't see this similarity either. There are some things that are similar. We have, you know, complacency, and we have a rising market that doesn't seem to want to go down, and you have a few subtle hints of similarities. But you know what I realized? It's all about clickbait. People get concerned about this. They want, it's an anniversary. Like when's the last time you had an anniversary of a market event that actually fell again on the same day?
Never.
Right. So, you know, this whole idea of putting all this out there that, oh yeah, could we have another crash? And then everybody waits. It's kind of like, you know, all those end of world prognostications that you see. You know,
2012 was going to be the big one.
End of the world there. Y2K.
Then we have a bunch of asteroids going to hit us. Planet X.
Right. No. So that's, I think, what's going on there. I think when you read these things, and I think that when our listeners, what they need to know is that a lot of this it's still and always has been, but it's all about whether it was in the newspapers, magazines, television, you know, right after this, we're going to bring you an expected potential for a crash similar to 1987, right after these messages. You know, why do they do that? They don't want you to change the channel. So it's an old trick. Same thing here. They want your eyeballs. They want you to click. You click, they get an advertiser credit. That's all this is. Don't you think?
It's the only real explanation, because there's not anything going on.
Yeah.
The market's at the beginning of a big bull market, it looks like.
Well, it looks like it doesn't want to stop no matter what. Even today, it was down all day until about 3 o'clock. And then just slowly kept on climbing. Now, the Dow Jones was up most of the day, but the S&P and the NASDAQ, small caps, they weren't. But it's just fascinating, though, the whole herd mentality. Don't you find that fascinating? You know, you have everybody all fearful.
It's kind of depressing, actually. It's not as fascinating to me anymore.
Why is it depressing?
Well, because it's like you'd think people would try to think for themselves, because this herd mentality thing is just a theme.
So much easier for someone else to think for you.
Yeah, well.
There's other things to be doing. They got to be drinking, you know, you need to be drinking IPAs and craft beers. You need to be getting your avocado toast.
That's what we've been told.
Yeah, you got
to
get
avocado for sure. Yes.
You got to have the avocado. You got to find, you know, restaurants that are kind of off the beaten path that nobody knows about. You know, you have to binge watch.
Yeah, binge watch.
You're told what to do. This used to be almost, I was not exclusively, but it was the fashion industry that did this for the longest time. I think they taught the rest of, you know, the kind of, they made the guidelines of what people would be wearing. And by the way, what the hell is this fashion with the ripped jeans? Have you seen these?
Well, I would call that this third or fourth iteration of ripped jeans.
I mean, these aren't ripped. These are shredded.
Yeah, these are very, very ripped.
Yeah, and they're expensive as hell.
I don't understand. That's the part I don't get. It seems to me that anyone can make these. You just get a pair of jeans, you bleach them a little bit, you beat them to death in the washing machine, and then you just rip them.
Just rip them, or you use like some kind of a claw device. Or
I mean, they have to be ripped by hand anyway. These aren't machine ripped.
You would think so, because they're all different.
Yeah.
You remember back in the days when high fashion designer jeans, remember the Jordache?
Yeah.
Who was the other one?
Well, it was Vanderbilt, I think, was one of the big ones. Gloria Vanderbilt had their jeans, wasn't it? Her or Diana Van Furstenberg? I don't know.
One of those, yeah.
They had a bunch of these names or had these jeans. It was a pair of jeans that cost an extra $100.
Right. And they, you know, look at the back. Oh, look what they're wearing. Yeah. And I got to tell you something. I think that I have no problem with jeans and you want to wear jeans. I mean, it's just pants, for goodness sakes, you know. But this ripped jean look, every time I go out somewhere, like to, you know, we go out to a nice place and people walk in with these ripped jeans. And I'm like, it's not right.
Oh, this is like you and the feet.
Well, it's not.
By the way, if you're going out and you're going to a place where they allow people to wear jeans in the first place, ripped or not. It doesn't sound like a very classy place.
That's true. Well, my wife bought a pair recently. She puts them on. She goes, "How does it look?" I'm like,
"They're defective."
I know. What happened? You know,
what happened?
How much did they cost? No, don't like them. Sorry. It's like, you don't like them? I'm like, no, I don't like them. I just don't like them. You know, she says, "Oh, they're really in." I'm like, you ask me a question. I'm sorry. What would you like me to say? Yes, they're lovely. They really accentuate, you know, your hair is perfect, your makeup is perfect, you got everything going on, and then you got these pants on with rips in them. I mean, you know, come on. Oh, unbelievable. Anyway, let's talk about next.
This little segment was just basically you complaining about your wife bought a pair of these things.
Yeah, that's pretty much. That's where we end up with this. So good. Fortunately, she doesn't listen to my show. Any of it.
Yeah, no.
She doesn't listen to anything I do. She doesn't read anything I write. You know,
that's perfect. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, she, what are you doing all day at work? You just sit around. I'm like, what do you mean I sit around? So what I do is I send her all the stuff that I do. She says, you have plenty of time to do stuff. I'm like, well, how does that happen? You know, I'm busy. So anyway, but speaking of busy, President Trump is close to naming the next Fed chair. And
I guess there's a betting pool out there.
Yep. You can go to predict. There's a bet for everything. You go to predict it. Predict.it. There's probably other places too. You could do this, but predictive is one of the places. And so here's what's the lineup is. And he actually mentioned that after or right before one of his trips to Japan or China, he's going to actually have this mentioned. And this poll moves. And this is basically the betting odds. This he confirmed that his five Fed chairs are Jerome Powell, Kevin Warsh, John Taylor, Janet Yellen, and Gary Cohn. And in terms of the favorites, they've been moving around a lot because he had a meeting, for example, with John Taylor yesterday, and that moved his ranking up. And then today or so, he mentioned something else. He's going to meet with Janet Yellen and something about Gary Cohn. And he had a meeting with Powell, which is now at 35%. Warsh is at 33%. John Taylor's at 16%. Yellen, 16%. And Gary Cohn's at 20%. 20% odds. I don't know who you think it's going to be. I mean, I think I talked about
this. It's going to be, yeah, I bet. I'm betting on Yellen.
Really?
Why do you say that?
Because I think I mentioned this last show, but I'm not sure. But because I think that President Trump wants to have and needs to have for his own satisfaction his stamp on these positions. And therefore, because Janet Yellen was appointed by a previous president, he's not going to be happy because therefore—
You think he's that petty?
I didn't say petty. Although it may be petty. But I think it's just because he wants control. It's more of a control issue. Not that he has control over the Fed, but he wants.
Well, here's my logic.
Okay.
The market's been going up ever since he got in. Yellen's the one that's been controlling it. She's the one that's kept anything from getting too weird. And why fix what's not broken?
That's logical. I'm not quite sure he's thinking that way on this topic. Although, let me just throw this out there. For all you people that think I'm a Trump hater, just get off of it. That's not the case. I'm not necessarily in love with the guy, but I'm not a hater. So don't start with the whole thing of, oh, you're left. And blah, blah, blah. That's not what we're trying to handicap this thing for you here. I think that Jerome Powell actually has a lot of the similar traits as Janet Yellen. And he's also not as, I don't think he's as strong in the area of looking for regulatory tightening. And if he is a good replacement in terms of a very similar type of outlook and very dovish with less, a less regulatory environment, then I think that he would be a very good pick. Thinking like President Trump. That's all I'm saying.
The logic there is good too.
Yeah. All right. Well, for the record, for the 2-bit bet we have here, you're going with Yellen. I'm going with Powell.
Do you give me odds?
You can have odds.
It'd be 2-1 because Jerome's Powell's 35%. She's only 16.
I'll give you 2-1 and we have a dollar on it. Okay. So therefore, if you win, you get a dollar. If I win, you get $2. I get $1.
Yeah.
Okay, that's how it works?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Perfect, okay. Now, I want to ask you, last time we talked and I asked you for an update on the fires in California, and you said there's no way these things are coming anywhere near me.
Okay.
Is there any further update?
Well, in terms of them coming any near me?
Well, anything that you've seen or smelled or
witnessed? Well, yeah, it was like the other day, let's see, a couple of days ago, let's say 3 days ago, you get up and it was stink. The whole Bay Area stunk like fire. And there was ash coming down. Not enough ash to cover anything. It would be like you'd see an ash floating around and you see it coming down and then it disappeared. That's about it. And then it would ruin the sunset. Or ruin depends on your definition. It made the sunsets kind of wild. And then like not yesterday, but the day before, cleared up like a champ. Beautiful weather, earthquake weather, as a matter of fact, as I explained on the No Agenda show what that means. And it's been very nice ever since, and I think the fires are largely under control.
I mean, we did see that there was a giant marijuana farm that went up in smoke, went up in flames. How great would have that been to be in the vicinity?
Downwind.
That'd be great.
there's now some conspiracy talk that a lot of Mexican cartels set these fires.
For what purpose?
To burn those banks of marijuana.
Huh. Well, that will help.
They're still smuggling it in.
That will help the stock we're going to talk about next. There was some rumors that Pacific Gas and Electric was responsible for these fires.
A lot of the fires is believed. I believe that too. That's why there's so many of them. Their power lines I think I've talked about it either on this show or another show or somewhere.
You talked about a no agenda. You said that they don't turn off the power.
They don't turn off the power and they don't turn off the gas.
Right. That was the discussion you had. You were explaining that to Adam and everybody, and he was asking you, what do you mean they don't turn off the gas? And you were telling about how if they turn off the gas, they can't turn it back on.
No, I said that's their excuse.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, their excuse. Sorry.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of other people that came up with a hat. I remember somebody tweeted this one. Oh, well, if they turn off the gas, then the flame will go up the pipe all the way to the gas tanks and it'll blow them up.
That's stupid.
It was very stupid. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, it seems that the causes of the fire are being investigated by the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, including the possible role of power lines and other facilities of Pacific Gas and Electric, symbol PCG, that had something to do with this. Now, when that news came out, you could only imagine what the reaction was with the stock. And I got a little picture here. This is updated earlier today. when it was at 50, or maybe this is yesterday, 53.89. This thing dropped down to about right under 50 from about a high of 70. Now, I picked this up for clients at 49.91 and rode it for 2 days up to about 56.
What's it at now?
It's about 57. Still pretty low, though. Here's the thing, though. Even if they were partially responsible somehow, they still have all of the money coming in from... first of all, I don't think they're going to be found unless it was punitive. I don't even know how this works, but...
The word's not punitive. But you're saying unless it was deliberate.
Yeah, deliberate. Right, and there would be punitive damages because, in some kind of legal case, that would take years to deal with. So I don't know.
I'm putting it on my buy.
I thought you would. So this actually pays a 4% dividend also. It has also the income coming in, although a lot less houses in California right now, but they have the income coming in from on a regular basis from their, their utilities and services that they supply. So that's not going to stop. And it seems to me that when we do find out that there is no, if we find out that there is actually no liability on this, and there's, this whole thing is just a crazy story, that this can kind of go right back up to, let's even say 66. I'm being very conservative here. Why doesn't it go back up to 70, right? Right before it.
Well, 70 is not its normal trading range.
Right.
It seems to trade around 68.
Yeah. So you got 57, you got 10 points. That would be pretty substantial.
For a utility that pays 4%?
Yeah, how great
I'd
is
say.
That? Yeah. Now I want to tell you a little story. I want to vent something. I'm having a little bit of a little rant. Can I do that?
I don't see why not.
So I want to tell you what's happening in the world.
You do it about people wearing slippers at the airport.
Well, the best thing that ever happened was the global entry. Just don't deal with that anymore. I don't have to deal with any of that anymore. Here's what's happening in the world of brokerages. An interesting story today that, or actually yesterday we found out about. And, back when one of the big things that happened was investors were suckered into buying mutual funds by, let's say, Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or whoever it was. And it was always the mutual fund of the company that they represented. So you'd have your rep from Merrill and they'd, we're going to do a whole financial plan for you. And here's what we have for you. We decided you should go into the growth. You need some stock. So we're going to go to the Merrill Lynch growth account, the Merrill Lynch small cap account, the Merrill Lynch international account, the Merrill Lynch bond account, the Merrill Lynch, you know what I'm saying? They had all these proprietary funds.
Yeah.
And salespeople or advisors were compensated a little bit extra. Now, when this was all found out, people were like, oh, this is really bad. So there was a crackdown on this whole thing about paying extra for proprietary funds so that it wouldn't be pushed ahead of any other things. Somewhat a precursor, a very long ago precursor to the fiduciary rules that are in place, that you do the right thing for your client, not for yourself first. Kind of proprietary funds, the whole idea of them kind of went away, just dissipated. People realize, I wrote a lot about this back a number of years ago, why to stay away from these. They were terrible performers. They were much more expensive internally. There was just all sorts of problems with them. So now let's fast forward. So we got these robo-advisors. And I talked to you about Investology that we have, which is a hybrid of these robo-advisor, kind of a new age robo where we use the back end, not the front end, and we do all the work and all that. Okay. So these robo-advisors came out and they were really cheap. And one of the reasons why is they use their own branded ETFs and funds. Something that we frowned upon just a few years ago, right? This whole
idea. Yeah, same thing.
Same thing. A little bit different in that the fees aren't as excessive. However, they're basically saying, hey, come to us. We'll do all this for you, but you have to buy our funds. So we use a TD Ameritrade for the Investology offering, and I get an email saying that they changed the lineup of their NTF or their no transaction fee ETFs in their offerings. Major update. What they did was they're telling us all the benefits. Here's all the benefits of why we're changing it. We're going to add a lot more and you'll not have any of these short-term redemption fees and all this other stuff. Okay. All right. Well, listen. So we get the list. And we start looking down this list and we say, what happened? Almost every one of the ETFs that we have in our platform that we like, a very broad list of these, are being taken out of the no transaction fee offering. And they're replacing these with a slew of names that are just like newer ETFs, low volume, somewhat unknown. And I started to dig in, why was this? Well, the reason obviously is that because these companies are paying TD Ameritrade a spiff on the back end, even though it doesn't cost an investor anything to get into it, they're paying a little bit more like a, you know, an advertising fee or a marketing fee to TD Ameritrade. Terrible, right?
So I've never been a fan of this practice.
So now we went a little further. So I compared the list of old funds that were in there and the new funds. There's hundreds of them. What we found was that the total assets under management for the new funds is far less than the previous. The average of assets under management in each of these ETFs now is about $879 million. Before it was $15 billion. Much greater, more liquid, higher trading, much more assets in them. The other thing that was even more repulsive was that the ETFs on average had double the fee in the new list than in the old list. Fees being replaced averaged of the funds we had 2.25% of the ETFs. Now they're 0.48%. And that differential, part of that's going back to TD Ameritrade. I wrote them a rather scathing letter today.
You should publish the letter.
Yeah, I should. Well, let me find out what's going on. I wrote to some of the people, the higher ups at TD, and I said, this is just not in the best interests of the client. And we have alternatives that we can use, so it's not a problem like what we used before. So it's not going to be a problem for us. But at the same time, this is just so repulsive that they're pushing us out of some of the ones that we were in. It's just terrible. Just terrible. So take that.
Well, it sounds like racketeering.
Yeah, in a way it is, I guess, because now you can have a choice. You don't have to use the no transaction fee ETFs, but you pay $6.95 a trade. And our platform's not built for that. We have, you know, a no fee, no transaction fee process. That's what that's what we decided to do. We could tell clients that we're going to have a $6.95 trade and that won't, you know, probably be a big deal, but that's not how we've designed this.
Huh.
And if that's not
Go get him. Go get him.
Yeah, if that's not bad enough, basically we have 4 days to make these changes.
Oh, geez.
Terrible. All right, politics. Now, this I need your help on. In Boulder, Colorado, there's someone looking to be elected to some government position, city council. Camilo Casas? Casas, I like Casas better. Camilo Casas is elected to the if Camilo Casas is elected to the city council of Boulder, Colorado this November, he doesn't plan to make any decisions himself. If he wins, he's instead giving up his vote to Party.Vote, a liquid democracy app he built to change how government functions. Basically, this is how it works. If more than 50% of the people in his community vote yes to an issue through the app, he will vote the same way they do. On the event of a tie, he'd be forced to make a decision based on his own beliefs. What do you think about this?
I don't know. What should I think about it?
Having an app that could be hacked, by the way, and you don't know.
Well, the hacking part is yes, that's problematic. In fact, now that you mention it, it will be hacked and this won't work.
Right? Everything else is hacked. Why not this?
Everything gets hacked.
Everything gets hacked.
Not hacked stuff.
Yes. So I find this.
Especially, I'm going to subscribe to the idea that blockchain is going to be hacked. And that'll be the end of that.
Ooh, that would be something.
It has to be.
I guess the people that develop it, people can hack it, right?
Yeah.
That's the point.
Can't get around this problem.
But isn't the point of electing someone to represent you to understand the information? You see, the problem is not that people are stupid.
It's a gimmick.
But people can't. Yeah, it's definitely a gimmick. That's what, you know what? That's it. You put the finger on the button on that one. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Moving along. Speaking about, we're going back to Colorado. We're staying in Colorado. Opioid deaths and opioid related deaths have fallen by more than 6% in Colorado. I don't know if this is causational or correlation or total hogwash, but in the 2 years after the state started selling recreational marijuana, according to this research poll, The deaths from opioid-related deaths fell 6%. They found that 6.5% reduction represents a reversal of a 14-year increase trend in opioid-related deaths in Colorado since 2000. But they stressed in the report that further research is needed in order to make the trend, see the trends could be, you know, if it's, could be seen beyond Colorado. But there's no, you know, nothing else has really been around as long. Do you think that's the case? Do you think that, that
people... Yeah, I do think so. Do?
Okay.
I think there's some evidence to back this up.
Well, that would be good.
Nobody wants to talk about it because all these guys, I don't know what the deal is where people can't get a clue about this and they don't want to... there are still people like, including people like Hillary Clinton, say, well, it needs more research. Yeah, there's anecdotal evidence that it helps kids who have a lot of seizures, stuff like that.
I mean, I understand why or how, or I can absorb and understand why marijuana was illegal when it was illegal. I get that. However, don't we kind of live in a new age where, you know, men can be women, women can be men, or you could be pansexual, or you can be, I don't know, whatever it is, and you have all these other things that people do, we're wearing ripped jeans into nice restaurants, for God's sakes, but we can't smoke pot. It doesn't make any sense. But you can, and you can get liquored up pretty good anywhere you go.
Yeah. And I'm crack up when they talk about the, we have pot smoking in Washington State. And we always are amused. When you drive around, you always spot a pot smoker.
Why is that? Driving slow?
They're always driving slow. I mean, they're always, oh, there's going to be more wrecks. There's more wrecks. No, there's not more wrecks. There's less wrecks. I mean, if there's a wreck, it's at 15 miles an hour. Right. I mean, these guys, they're driving so slow as not to be noticed.
Right.
Or because they're so high, they can't really drive fast because it's like, oh, my God.
It does slow you down, right?
It slows if you're driving, yeah.
Did I tell you about this meeting I had? I had a breakfast meeting with somebody last week. And during the meeting, we're talking about something, and I'll leave out all the details. But I didn't know this guy very well. I just, as a matter of fact, I met him for the first time. And during our meeting, he pulls out a vapor pen. And he takes a couple of dregs on it.
Yeah.
It was pot.
Okay.
And as I'm talking to him, it's very.
Is it in Florida?
Yeah, it's in Florida. But he doesn't live in Florida. He lives in California.
Oh, so he just thinks he can smoke pot anywhere.
Yeah. So and in the middle of a restaurant, too. Okay?
Yeah.
And it was very noticeable.
I know the type.
Yeah, very noticeable how about 5 minutes afterwards, he slowed down incredibly.
Yeah. I'll bet he did.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting the whole time. First, I was wondering, is he going to pass it to me? And what do I do under that circumstance? You know, and how do I deal with this? But he didn't, so I didn't have to deal with that. But
what would you have done?
I would have said no.
I don't vape.
No, it's been a very long time. I'd have to be in a secure place. It just doesn't work for me.
Or you go, you hold your hand out, like your palm out forward, and you kind of shake, move it back and forth, wiggle it back and forth, and say, "Only edibles for me."
Oh yeah, only gummy edibles.
Gummy.
Starting January 22nd, 2008, residents of 9 states will need passports to board a flight, domestic or international, according to new TSA guidelines.
That's dumb.
Yep. Kentucky, Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Washington.
Why?
Each of these states don't carry, they don't currently issue a
state ID. Oh, they don't issue the driver's license that you're supposed to have.
Right, with the Real ID Act of 2005.
Now, the question on my mind is, a passport card work?
Is it? What's a passport card?
Well, passport cards are like passports.
Right.
You can get one. If you get a passport, I recommend everyone check the box and get a passport card with it. And you get a little card. It's a card. It says passport, but it's a card. And it is useful because that's all you need to cross the Canadian or Mexican border.
So it's a passport. It's like a federal ID. That is like a passport, but it doesn't one that for places that don't require stamps.
Yeah, well, not just, to make more specific, as far as I know, it's only Mexico and Canada.
Okay.
And so I think there's other places you can go that don't require stamps.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, it's only good for Mexico and Canada. But it seems to me it would be the right ID for getting on an airplane.
Yeah, that would seem like it. Until we get the microchips embedded in our hands or the retinal scans.
Yeah.
California, just back to there for 1 second. Once again, drones, you know, these schmucks who are flying the drones over the fires to get their videos, their 3D or their GoPro videos.
Yeah.
Have made, the efforts for planes and for helicopters and any other flying, service devices to, put the fires out and to rescue people, grounded many of them until they actually got these drones turned off. And we see this all the time. Now, here's a great story. If there was a story of the week or something like that, my opinion, at least, this got it. Well, I don't know how true it is, but Julian Assange, was thanking in a tweet the U.S. government. He said in a tweet over a weekend, he posted, first of all, a screenshot of Bitcoin prices on July 18th, 2010 and October 14th, 2010. And he said because the U.S. government forced payment companies like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and all that to carry out an illegal banking blockade against the organization, that he put all his money into Bitcoin. And he made 50,000% return.
I guess he's not going to be complaining about PayPal.
Yeah. He's happy. Here's a tweet. I put the tweet up on the site. You go over to DH Unplugged and check out all these different links and pictures and things that we talk about. So he says, my deepest thanks to the U.S. government, Senator McCain and Senator Lieberman for pushing Amex, Visa, PayPal, MasterCard, money bookers et al. Into erecting an illegal banking blockade against WikiLeaks in 2010. It caused us to invest in Bitcoin with a 50,000% return.
What was Bitcoin selling for in 2010?
Like 10 cents?
No. Probably a few hundred bucks.
No. 2010. 2010. Bitcoin price 2010. Let's see. It was July 2010. It was 8 cents.
What?
Yeah. In 5 days from... This is interesting. In 5 days, the price grew 1,000%, rising from 0.008 to 8 cents for one Bitcoin. Then February 2011, it was $1. July 2011 is $31. Then it was down to $2 again. 27 more rows. How do you click this? $100 of Bitcoin in two. This is interesting. $100 of Bitcoin in 2010 is now worth $75 million.
Well, that's depressing.
Yeah. The question is, I looked at getting into Bitcoin at $300. And I said, this is ridiculous. So much of that. It's now at, what, 5,500, 5,600? Yep. Well, by the way, you can follow John C. Dvorak over at The Real Dvorak on Twitter. Myself, Andrew Horowitz. That's one word. You can also donate if you feel compelled, because when you donate, we do things like crazy things, like what John didn't do this week again, I am sure, which is go to Trader Joe's.
I'm closer.
Yeah.
Because this time I actually was going, well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I was going by Trader Joe's and I said to myself, I could stop in and get something, but the show's tonight. So I'll try to do it this week and actually eat some of this food.
Just get it, because a lot of it's frozen. Just go in there, grab a few things and throw it in the freezer. Frozen stuff is good. Anyway, please donate. Go over to the site, DH Unplugged. It helps us to pay for the server costs, development costs, a variety of the other things that for things like the weekly stock picks to keep that going, the old codgers versus the millennials, all the things that we do, and also the games that we play and the shirts that we give away and all that good stuff. Oh, I'm getting in challenge coins. I'll tell you that off the sidebar. We're getting in challenge coins for Investology. They look really cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Let's see. The speaking of the closest to the pin, Equifax, which I think is trading in at 108 or 109, is currently the close to the pin. So you have, I think, actually it's closed. So we'll announce the winner next week. Okay, let's see here. All right. Amazon. News on Amazon today. They're going after potentially a competitive new concept that is going to compete against Home Depot and Lowe's. I have no idea what that could be.
Huh.
They're also getting into the drug delivery business. You heard this one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What will they not get in? What?
I'm thinking, you know, they since they do like to play around on both sides of the online versus brick and mortar, and there's a deal that fell through recently, I'm thinking that Amazon's in perfect position to buy Nordstrom's.
What would that do?
Give them Nordstrom's. It's a Pacific Northwest company. Nordstrom's a Pacific Northwest company. Hmm. It's like buying Whole Foods.
So this is buying.
By the way, so I have a Whole Foods report. I went to Whole Foods and I talked to some guy. There was like Chatterbox that been at Whole Foods forever. And he says that they gave a huge boost in sales. A lot of stuff is selling out fast because a lot of stuff that's really discounted heavily, like one third the price it used to be.
Wow.
And now, according to my wife and some others, there's a lot of black folk that are now shopping at Whole Foods that they've never seen before.
Black folk.
You've never seen a black person in Whole Foods.
Let me think about this. I have no idea, but okay, I'll go with it.
Well, around here, you don't do it. They're too smart for that. But now they're starting to shop there, which shows that there's the prices are actually reasonable. So it's going to be interesting to see how that changes things.
I don't even want to go with the discussion of cheaper prices and black people and all that, because it's just going to be a very bad outcome to the discussion. I'm just telling you right now. So we're not talking about it.
Fine. Yeah. I'm just saying that I think they're smart shoppers.
Ah. Oh. I got you. All right. Mexico and Canada. NAFTA. Okay. All right. Speaking about exactly what you were talking about. You ever hear of Mark Faber?
Yes.
He's a doom gloom. How's he talk? He's Mark Faber for the doom gloom and boom report. Take that accent and put it German. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the market's going to crash and we're in a bubble. Mark Faber. I always thought it was Faber, more German.
Well, I thought it was Faber. Okay, go on.
It's spelled the same way. He agreed to leave the board of money manager Sprott and another company today after he wrote in his most recent newsletter this month that, quote, the U.S. would look like Zimbabwe, end quote, if it had been settled by black people instead of whites.
What?
That's what he said. That's what he wrote. I saw the writing. It was a little bit more, there was more to this.
Yeah.
There was more to it. It's something about, he wrote a few more things, you know, he said, but I'm not being racist, but, you know.
Yeah. There's always a big but.
Yeah, I'm not a racist, however, or, you know, I'm just telling you the facts. He basically, you know, and this is kind of ugly, you know, basically saying that, I think he wrote also something about white people. Countries with white people have a better financial system and they're more affluent and all this. There may be some truth in that when you look at some of the African countries and all, but it's a whole different environment. It's a whole different thing going on there. But writing it like this, saying that, you know, we look like Zimbabwe. Now, there is some point there. Listen, if blacks settled here and blacks were, we'd have a country that looked more like Zimbabwe, which had a lot more black people. I mean, that's a fact. But to, you know, in a world that's so, everybody is so on their toes about this whole, you know, being politically correct and all that, you just don't do that.
So what happened?
He's being ousted from a few boards. Probably.
No, there you go.
Yep. And also, by the way, I think now Bob, the brother of what's his name, is being ousted.
Weinstein.
Bob is now, somebody said that he's now done something bad or whatever.
Well, I read the report on it. It seems that he was a pest. He wasn't like a masher. He wasn't like a rapist. He wasn't like a groper. He just kept asking this one woman over and over and over and over and over again whether she'd go out to dinner with him.
I got to tell you something. This is concerning.
Many times she said no, she finally got fed up with him.
This is very concerning because it's opening the door now for anyone to say that anybody's been sexually harassing them, and the immediate you know, you have no explanation, nothing you could do about it. Even if you negate it, whatever, you're done. I mean, the guy, Amazon Studios guy, is gone.
Well, he, yeah. Yeah, he is gone. Yes, that one woman. That one woman, by the way, I wouldn't mess with her. Rose McGowan, I guess, is who it is.
Yeah, yep.
She is one tough cookie.
Oh, yeah.
She is just black. You say, you just look at her cross-eyed and she's going to blast you.
Yeah.
So she got rid of that guy.
Yep. And she got back on Twitter.
Yeah, she seemed to have a lot of pent-up hostility, that woman. And I think probably for good reason.
Yeah. But I
definitely this is a woman scorned. Hello.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am very concerned about the potential for false accusations being met with immediate action.
Oh, yeah. It's dangerous. But, you know, this has always been kind of a problem.
Yeah.
It's the social media. There's a lot of issues. Not much you can do about it.
All right, let's go to a couple more things and we'll get to our stocks. The 10 most valuable land areas by zip code. We got a little table here. I know you like these.
I love the tables.
So this is kind of interesting. The zip codes with the highest average land value per home in 2016. So what they did is, if you look at how they did this, they stripped out like the housing value and just put the land. I thought these numbers were absurd. For land values of the average house land. So whatever you have a
quarter acre. Is it an acre? Or is
well, whatever you have. What are the average price of land per house. So is it the highest average land value per home? So you take out. So if the property is worth $5 million and they say that the value of the house is $2 million, the land is worth $3 million. So they take that they add it all up and they get an average. And Santa Monica, California, zip code 90402. $3.7 million wins the top price.
Yeah, okay. It sounds kind of right, but because the houses are so expensive. Same. And the property usually is not built next to each other. You get a quarter of an acre or something.
Up by you, it's pretty. Like,
this is a bullshit. There's another one of these charts that I just I have nothing but distaste for.
Yeah, Palo Alto's at 3.2.
Is that a lot? Is that two lots? Is that somebody with a double wide lot? Is that some guy with a half acre? I do know this. I went to I was buying an artwork from somebody, rich guy in Palo Alto. He's a lawyer. And so I went over to there and I visited a beautiful house, big giant house in a cul-de-sac, all wooded in. It's in Palo Alto, which is high end. And I said, what is the, you're selling? He said, yeah, we're selling most of our art. We're going to buy new art for the house. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. And I said, I asked for a couple of pieces that he wouldn't sell. But I said, so what are you doing? She said, oh, yeah, we're going to level the house and rebuild it because we don't like the way it hits the sun.
Oh.
So they got this beautiful house in Palo Alto. They're going to flatten it and rebuild a whole new house on that same lot. It's a big lot. That's one of these lots worth $3-4 million.
A lawyer.
But that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, people down here in Fort Lauderdale on the water, Miami on the water, I mean, prices are just crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Small little crappy lots on, you know, we're talking about, 120 by 80? $1 million.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Mm-hmm. All right, getting into the end of this. One quick funny story. Geneva prosecutors are investigating a situation where toilets in a bank and three restaurants were blocked by about $100,000 in high denomination euro banknotes, or 100,000 euros. Somebody was obviously trying to, I guess, in the bank.
There's all kinds of jokes I'm trying to come up with here, but I'm not coming up with any good ones, except somebody doesn't give a crap. But that's no good.
They need to
buck stops here.
They're gonna flush out the criminals in this.
So, wow. So they found all this money and then what?
I guess they scooped it out somehow. I mean, I think. Scooped it out. Well, they did something with it. I think what probably was happening is somebody robbed a bank, pushed it down the toilet, was going to go rescue this stuff in the sewers.
Maybe.
I mean, it's a good plan.
It's a crazy idea.
Yeah. But these were banknotes also that were going to be pulled off circulation. I think they have the 5,000 euro notes. You know how So I don't know. You wouldn't be able to use them anyway. So who knows? Just a, that was a crappy story. Let's move on.
Bada bing.
What is John C. Dvorak writing for PC Magazine?
I wrote a little piece on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
About how Twitter is getting a lot of people in trouble.
Well, how? And,
well, there's a New York Times article talking about their new procedures guidelines. And I was praising the New York Times for coming up with these guidelines of how to use Twitter if you're an employee, reporter, journalist, management, anything, to be careful that you don't, like, the way I see it, they're trying to not give away the fact that there are a bunch of Trump-hating Democrats at the New York Times. And so you have to be careful with your tweets because the public will come after them saying, hey, look, you guys, this guy's a bigot. You know, he's the way he sees things. And so they want you to tweet a certain way. I think this is true for all big companies and should be exercised by everybody. In other words, be careful when you tweet.
They're, especially if you're representing your company in any way. We saw that person tweeting last week that got kind of, I think somebody got fired for some stupid tweet about something, somebody in the news. But, you know, in the financial industry, there are regulations on what you can do and what you can't and compliance and all that. So it should be there, you know, with every company. I'm surprised, actually, of how many people in high positions feel they can say whatever the hell they want, whenever they want. Not that free speech isn't allowed and all that, but it just, you know, it's just not smart business practices.
No, it's not smart at all. And I think a lot of people are taking huge risks. I think they're naive.
Yeah. Yep.
I think the one you're talking about is that CBS executive, which I cited in the article, who said, oh, well, the shooting in Vegas, I have no sympathy because they're probably a bunch of gun-toting Republicans because it's a country western thing.
Yep, exactly.
She got fired immediately.
Immediately, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're coming to a close here. Let's get over to the stocks. Let's take a look. You can find this on dhunplugged.com. Go over to the weekly stock picks. And on that, you could find my voice is kind of hoarse. I don't know what's going on. You hear that at all? Maybe it's just a
bit. Yeah.
Late night. You can find all the stocks and how they're doing. It's a game that we play. It's not a buyer recommendation or a sell recommendation. It's not any recommendation at all. Use your own judgment when you are thinking about any of these things. And of course, do some research. We are not held responsible for anything. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz and Company clients may own any of the securities that are mentioned. And we will duly note that on the list at the same time. So things are looking pretty good. You got kicked off on your Beijing.
I see that.
You got kicked off at 101. I think it's like 85 now or something.
Oh, really? Well, I'm glad it got kicked off.
Let's see. The BG.
They end up with a 43% gain on that thing.
BGNE is trading at, oh, it's 87. Where do you get kicked off? 87. So you get kicked off at 101.
Yeah, so it was way up.
Yep. But everything is looking pretty good. Alexion's up 20%, CSX up 5%. I think they're reporting this week. Five Below up 15%. GE, oh, GE's on here. I was going to buy GE today. I didn't realize you had it on. Can I buy it still?
I forget. What was my rationale for buying it?
Lark Insiders.
Yes.
Yeah. So I could buy it.
You can buy it. Why don't you just turn the thing into a, why don't you jump on my buy and just put it into a purple.
Well, because
Purple's always a winner.
I'll buy it a lot cheaper. I'm going to buy it at like 23. I'm going to buy it 5% lower than you.
Okay, we'll go.
GoDaddy's up 2.5%. Nugget, the gold is up 3.5%. Intercellular Therapeutics up 11%. Mankind got stopped out for an 11.8% profit. We'd have actually 24% if it was allowed to run.
No, that's too bad.
There you go. So I had GE. You want to put PCG on there?
What's PCG?
PGC.
Did I say PGC? Oh, yeah. You mean, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Pacific Gas and Electric Corporation. Yeah. Okay, we'll put bounce. That on there.
That's a bounce.
Bounce. What else you got?
I don't really have anything else. Let me take one more look at my list of potential things to look at, potential buys. I'm already looking at them. Yeah. Oh man, I just got something. I got some auto play going on. I can't stop it.
Oh, that's not it. That's PPAC Gladstone, PC Pacific Gas.
What's PGE?
P
PGE? It should be PGE.
That's Group 10 Metals. It's PCG. I think that's it. Yep, that's it. PCG.
Never used to be.
PCG.
Okay. Well, let's see. There's a couple of real big inside buyings on. By the way, here's an interesting play. Looked at this chart of KALV, I think it's Cal Vista Pharmaceuticals.
Yep. Actually, I've been playing that the last few days. Trading that.
Looks like it was up there, and it was looked like it was going to. It rocketed up for some reason unknown, and then it crashed, and now it's been floating around a little higher than it usually trades.
Yeah,
what do we know about
this? There was some news about this. Let's see. There was, what was the reason on this? There was something. Merck taking ownership stake, October 10th.
Oh.
Merck, Cal Vista shares surged 110% on news of Merck ownership stake. Yeah, October 10th.
So why would anybody be buying it now?
They probably wouldn't be, but the way that these pharmaceuticals have been moving, they're buying anything. It's like they're going crazy for these things.
There's some action as a penny stock. This is actually something I'd be maybe interested in buying myself because it's an interesting play. We'll put it on, but it's a 15%. Yeah, it's 15%. I think I can live with that because right now it is not going to move. I don't think it's going to move down, but this is an insider and it's also, I don't know why it's going up. It's been as high as $2.40 is $1.51 now or something like that. What's GSAT, Global Star.
GSAT, Global Star. All right, let's see what that chart looks like real quick. GSAT. Global Star Americas. American, okay. Global Star, what do they do? Let's see.
It's wireless communication. Satellite, guys. Uh-huh. Yeah.
No earnings. Oh, yeah, they're with Iridium and Dish and EchoStar. Okay, L'Oreal. And the chart, let's go down here.
It's like a satellite management company. I think I had a lunch with somebody from one of these satellite companies. They told me all kinds of cool stuff about these satellites. What happens when they die, why they, the satellites that are used for the TV and all the rest of it has to be repositioned constantly.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Stock's up 312% in the last 1 year. Year to date, oh, 5 years, 5 years. 1 year is up 43%. Year to date is up 2%. So, yeah, it has potentially, it looks like it has some support here, too, at this level, the 1.5 level or so. So you can put 15% on there and, oh, no, I put this wrong. PCG, enter. Okay, that I got there. Then I got GSAT here. Okay. And then what's the rationale here?
Insiders buying. I'm just as pure insider trading.
Okay.
And maybe there's something going on. Maybe there's I don't know. I'm just going to go with the insider. So it's not a minor amount of money. Let me go back and find out what it is. Some guy. It's one of the, I'll get you the details. It's like not a minor amount of money. So this character who's the CEO. So it's the CEO, James Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
So when the CEO, it seems to me, I could be wrong, and I don't see that he's doing this on options because he's done some options and they are carried on this list of insiders. He appears to have bought $43 million worth.
Wow. Wow.
And he's upped his total of shares to 669 million shares up from 500 million. So he's buying into this thing for some reason.
That is a significant amount of money. There's no question about that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not chump change.
So no. I'm taking a look at. He shows some trading cred because he did dump a bunch of his GSAT at $2.82.
Mm.
And then he picked it up again. Not the same amount, but he picked up a lot. At $1.86. So he's selling at $2.80, picking up at $1.86. He also didn't get out cents and now is at $1.57, but he's buying a crap load. I'm just looking at what he's up to, and it looks like to me that something's screwy.
He's got some logic.
I believe he knows something.
Yeah. People are asking in the chat room, where do you get your insider information from? What site?
I get it from about five different sites.
Oh, okay.
Just go to Google and look up insider trades. In fact, if you can look it up, this is not very hard to find. Just look up insider trading on Google, and you'll find dozens of sites that cover this.
All right, perfect. All right, we're going to end it here, and I'm going to see you again next week where we're 1 week closer to November.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, then it'll be November.
It'll be close. We're getting closer. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.